I want to invite you to reach for your handout as we look at this story of Jesus being the Debbie Downer of the day. I don't know if you grew up with Saturday Night Live like I did, but boy, maybe decades ago, 15 years or so, Debbie Downer was the person that wherever she went to Disneyland, she'd go to dinner parties, anywhere she went, nothing ever was good enough. All she did was complain. Everyone was troubled by the fact that they'd mention really good things, and then she would find criticism a place to just bring everybody down. Well, Jesus is the Debbie Downer at this party, if you noticed. You just can't take him anywhere. And you find that everyone is criticized in this account that's before us because Jesus is going to take issue with everyone. He's going to take issue with the host. He's going to take issue with the guest. You have to assume that if you were present at this dinner, this was an awkward situation, particularly if you're Jesus' disciples. If this were a modern day account, I could imagine a news reporter sitting outside the door of this host's house, interviewing people as they're leaving, and he might get one of the guests and ask, how'd the party go? And the guest would say, you know, really bad. Jesus, this guy, disrespected us all. He made it sound like we were all selfish status seekers, all there just simply for what we could get out of it. I'm completely and utterly frustrated by the fact that he was even invited to this party. Then, of course, the host might come out and the interviewer would say, how'd it go? And the host would say, what nerve this guy has. Telling me who to invite to my house and then disrespecting me and my guest who are all good people. And then, of course, the interviewer might grab one of the disciples on the way out and the disciple would simply say, this happens all the time. you think we'd get used to this by now, but I'm just not used to this. We can't take him anywhere. This is why we're never invited back to any parties. Jesus tends to do these kind of things and we just simply have to get used to this. Everyone would have negative things to say except for one person. And of course, you know, reporters are always looking for that contrary view. They interview people, but then they want to give you the whole truth as if truth could be reduced to two options when it's really more like 17. But they look for some other perspective on it and they get it. This reporter, if he talked to the last person in verse 15, one of the guys comes out and he says, this party rocked. Blessed is anyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of God. Which is a way of saying, you know, I'll take what he's having. Jesus rocks. I don't care what anyone says about him. His kingdom, his way of thinking is amazing. I love it. So there is one guy that seems to have enjoyed this party. Perhaps he was happy that everyone was frustrated by it because he may have been on the outskirts, on the margins to begin with. Now, one of the things you have to ask in an account like this is, why did Jesus behave like this? And it's easy to miss why Jesus is behaving like this. It's found in verse 1. On one occasion, Jesus was going to the house of a leader of the Pharisees, which means this guy's a leader, he's a Pharisee, he's committed to holiness, he's committed to Torah, he's committed to Sabbath keeping, and he's there, verse 1, to eat a meal on the Sabbath. This is a Sabbath meal. And a Sabbath meal was different than other meals. A Sabbath meal was meant to honor and to celebrate God. It was meant to be a meal that remembered God's great salvation of a people that were impoverished and oppressed by slavery. It was a meal that was intended to honor God. And Jesus looks around and he doesn't see any honoring of God going on. And he assumes the Pharisee who's leading this should know better. The Pharisees should know from various passages in Torah, for example, Deuteronomy 5, remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Sabbath was a time when the people of Israel were to remember we were once slaves in Egypt. We were people at the lowest end of the social rung. Nobody cared for us. Everyone oppressed us. We were marginalized. We were forgotten. We were just tools for people to use. And they are to remember that situation they were in, and in doing that, recall how they should as well be concerned for and love those who are marginalized, who are outcast, who are impoverished, who don't have a chance to be seen by the general public. But instead, Jesus looks at this party and he sees all the guests jostling for position. jostling for status, seeking to be recognized. And that's when he loses it. Something has to be said, according to Jesus. He has to challenge it. And so he challenges the guest first in our second paragraph. He doesn't come right out and just challenge them. He tells a parable, which is his way of throwing, if you will, a grenade or planting a landmine. He's not directly confronting them, but he's telling a story that he hopes will erupt in their face, and they'll begin to see what it is that they need to hear from this parable. And his parable is pretty simple, if you noticed as I was reading in the second paragraph. It is, you know, if you go to a wedding banquet, you take the highest place, the best seats, and the host comes along and says, "Those seats aren't yours," and demotes you to another seat, that's going to be shameful. People are going to be embarrassed, and you are going to be embarrassed. But if you take the lowest seat and the host comes in and elevates you to the best seat, then you're going to be honored. You're going to be one that others look at and say, "Hey, you know, this person was at the lowest, but they've been given the best. This host must really think highly of him or her." Well, Jesus doesn't come right out and express it, but he's trying to get them to see a truth that's throughout the Old Testament. Verse 11, "All who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Constantly, the prophets would speak of the importance of humility, of the importance of lowliness, of the importance of taking the lowest place, identifying with the weak and the poor, understanding that that's where we come from. That's from the stance from which we've been delivered. And Jesus is once again pointing all these status-seeking guests to the fact that Sabbath isn't a time to exalt yourself. The celebration of the holy meal of salvation isn't the time when you exalt yourself. It is instead a time when you humble yourself so that God may exalt you. So that's why he criticizes the guest. But then, because I guess he wants to make everyone an enemy at this party, he criticizes the host in our third paragraph. And the reason he criticizes the host is, again, connected to the Sabbath meal. This was a meal that was supposed to honor God and God's salvation. But guess who the Pharisee had invited? His rich friends, the powerful, the well-to-do, the successful. Everyone in his inner circle who could, as Jesus emphasizes, pay him back. They could reciprocate on the favor. He's doing a good deed for them. He scratches their back. They scratch his back. He gets something for his effort. He's going to be repaid, and all will return the favor. Well, Jesus looks out and says, "This is a Sabbath meal. This isn't a social gathering. This is a Sabbath meal. This isn't just any dinner. This is the holy dinner." And as he looks out, he says, "Where are the blind? Where are the lame? Where are the impoverished? Where are the crippled? Where are they? Where are those people who cannot return the favor?" Because Jesus understands, as all the prophets did, the Sabbath meal must be more than simply a nice social gathering. And that's what this meal was. As Jesus goes through these criticisms, we realize that what he's doing is he's being the Miss Manners of the kingdom. Did any of you grow up listening to or reading Miss Manners columns? I never did because I never cared. But that's a slight on me. I should care more than I do. You know, Miss Manners, who writes the columns about proper etiquette within our culture when you go to a meal, make sure the spoon's here and the fork's here and the knife's here, and I couldn't tell you where they're supposed to go, somewhere on the table. Make sure the napkin's on your lap, all those kind of things. One of the interesting things, however, about Miss Manners is she is completely culturally isolated. When I went to Africa in Petayuki, Zambia, you know what the cultural etiquette for dining was there? No forks, no knives, no spoon. You take your hand, this hand, and you dip it into the rice with everyone else. That's the etiquette. So if you had used a spoon or a fork or knife, you would have been seen as being completely inappropriate, because that's how etiquette seems to run. It runs with certain cultures. Jesus is giving the table manners of kingdom culture. He's giving table manners of God's holy meal. What society ought to look like and what society ultimately will look like under the Lordship of Christ Jesus. And in giving these table manners for the kingdom, we are getting, if you will, divine etiquette. And when we look at this story, I see two rules that he's giving about divine etiquette, behavior at the holy meal. The first rule is take the holy place. Let the host exalt you, not yourself, which goes against everything our society values. You know that, don't you? We have a tendency to want to claw our way to the top of the heap. We're preoccupied with how we can distinguish ourselves from others. When we go to a party or we go to an event, one of the first things that most of us are doing are comparing. How are they dressed? Am I dressed better? What car did they drive in? Do I have a nicer car? What neighborhood do they come from? Do I live in a nicer neighborhood? And we tend to evaluate and assess someone's worth and value by how far up the ladder they have climbed. We are all caught up in this. None of us are exempt from it. We're all involved in this rat race, which is why, even though we say at times we think that people have worth and value just simply because they're made in God's image, if we really think about it, what we are truly thinking is, yeah, that sounds good on the surface, but really, your worth and value is assessed by the wealth you have, and the resources you have, and the gifts you have, and how high up in the pecking order you have claimed yourself. We're all caught up in the rat race. Lily Tomlin, an old comedian, I think she's still around, has a wonderful quote, she's so good. She says, the trouble with the rat race is that even if you win, you're still a rat. Even if you win, you're still a rat. Well, here's the thing about Jesus' divine etiquette. He never takes part in the rat race. Read your Gospels. He has no concern for what the culture and society thinks about him. You see it in this very account. I mean, he's going to a party. It's not his party, and he's more than willing to make it turn tables in order for him to make sure that they understand this isn't right. This is a holy meal. If this had just been any dinner party, Jesus would have been out of place. But this was a Sabbath meal, and Jesus just can't let it sit because he is the one who has left the throne of heaven. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, identifies as a servant, and then will identify between two crucified criminals, taking the lowest possible place in our society so that God may exalt him. He doesn't seek to exalt himself. Instead, he leaves that up to God. And so Jesus says, at the holy meal, at the place where we celebrate God's salvation, there shouldn't be a scuffling for the highest seat. There should instead be a humility. For God exalts the humble and God opposes the proud. The second rule of divine etiquette is the one that's even more challenging, and that is when Jesus says, give without expectation of return. Verse 13, but when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed. Why? And this is what I hope you get. You will be blessed because they cannot repay you. That is so counterintuitive, so countercultural. We usually give in order to get. We, in this situation, the host is throwing this Sabbath meal because the expectation is if he throws it this week, then one of his rich friends will throw it next week and one other in their circle of friends will throw it the next week. And so they're all going to benefit from this giving because the giving is really about getting. Jesus instead says, no, if you want to be blessed, if you want to know God's blessing, if you want to know what it is to celebrate and honor God, give freely without expectation of return. And one of the ways you make it very clear that you're giving without expectation of return is you invite the dispossessed and the disabled and the marginalized and the impoverished, any within the category of people that cannot pay you back. This is why, in my opinion, one of the reasons God blesses this church, not only because of the great people in this church and the many gifts and the sacrificial people, giving people give, but I believe God blesses this church because we invite to the table the dispossessed. We have a circle of friends. We don't expect any return. We're just trying to help people. We have an India mission where we're helping orphans and people in need. We don't expect anything in return. We're not trying to get something back. What's in it for us? Well, nothing. Accept God's blessing. Because to fail to do that is to completely exempt ourselves from God's blessing. Jesus makes it clear, God blesses those who give not to get, but they give with no expectation of return. It is that etiquette that is worthy of the salvation meal, not the kind of etiquette of I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. Jesus wants to say a lot about our behavior at the table. He wants to say where we sit at speaks volumes, and the people we choose to sit at the table with and to welcome reveals all kinds of things about whether our lives are in tune with God's blessing or whether we're ignorant of God's blessing. That point is repeatedly made right here because if you think about it, at the end of the day, this is our Sabbath meal. This is our new salvation meal. It is the comparison or equivalent to Israel's Sabbath meal. At their Sabbath, they would remember God's great salvation of the lowest of the low from Egypt, delivering them in spite of themselves without any expectation of repayment. Here we have this meal where we're not enslaved to Egypt or foreign powers. We're enslaved to our sin, and yet we're freed from that. We are given a salvation not because Jesus has an expectation of return, but because someone is finally willing to give himself so completely for no other reason than to honor God. At this table, Christ is our host, and because he's the host, it's his rules that matter. Not Mrs. Manners, not your rules. Not my rules. It's his rules that matter. And when his rules matter, what we realize is his rules are take the lowest place and give expecting nothing in return. Those are hard lessons for us to get, and that's why Jesus gave us a sacrament. To constantly remind ourselves of the one who humbled himself and identified with the lowest of the low. To constantly remember the one who gave without any thought for return. And I guess the challenge for all of us is, will we break from the majority? Because if we read this story right, the majority do not ever want to invite Jesus back to their meal again. The host, the guest, even the disciples are embarrassed. They have decided, you know, when we throw another party, let's not invite that Debbie Downer. Let's make sure that he's not part of it, that he just brings everyone down. Instead of being like the majority, can I call you to consider being like the minority? Like that last guy in verse 15 who says, you know what, this is it. Blessed is the one who eats bread in the kingdom of God. Will you, will I, will we be that one? Would you pray with me?